You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister Dee Combs. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. I repeat, SankofaCouncilMKE@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
This is in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in the United States. We stand with you.
We're poor to the creative spirit, the great Ashe out of which we all emerge. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to that creative spirit by whatever name we know it, whatever name you hold in your heart, in your mind, whatever name your ancestors gave. whatever name you learned as a child, whatever name you believe it to be, whatever name you believe it to be in spirit or in science. Ashe.
Okay.
We pour to the first human beings who came into existence on this planet, the first human beings who raised the first structures, who cooked the first meals, who taught the first children, who had the first children, the first Africans, the first people who stood upright, who walked, who figured out how to stay on this planet, who figured out how to pass that knowledge on to their children and their children's children, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour the next libation to their grandchildren, their children's children, those who raised the great early civilizations of Kemet and Kush and Monomotapa, the great medieval civilizations of Ghana and Mali and Songhai and Kanem-Bornu. We pour to those who great the great civilizations of the Igbo people and the Hausa people and the Kikongo people and the Mbara people, the great Mande civilizations, the great Kikongo, the great civilizations of Southern Africa, the Bantu people, the great civilizations of Southeast Africa, the Dinka, the Shilluk, the Nuer. We pour to those millions who raised the foundations from which the world would learn what it meant to be human in the world, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who, upon the arrival on the shores of people they had never seen before, found themselves captured and marched overland, found themselves perishing by the millions before they were held on the holding cells and the open air pens on the coast of West, Central, Southern, and East Africa. We pour to the ancestors who did not know, as they were stripped of all clothing and sent denuded into boats, packed like animals and strewn their bones across the floor of the Atlantic and the Indian Ocean. We pour to them who in the last moment on Africa grabbed the sand and grabbed the dirt and put it in their mouths and understood that the only thing they might have to preserve their place in that continent was their memory of that place and their ability to pass it on to their children. We pour to them. Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to those Africans and their children who, finding themselves cast adrift in Santiago, Cuba, who found themselves cast adrift in Puerto Spain, Trinidad, and Port-au-Prince, Haiti, who found themselves cast adrift in New Orleans and Charleston and Mobile, who found themselves cast adrift in Salvador, Bahia, who found themselves cast adrift in Barbados and the archipelago that formed the Wayward and the Windward Coast. We found them in these places, learning Portuguese and Spanish and French, whose often first words was, "Oh my God," or "Madre de Dios," who found themselves praying to survive and pass on to their children the memories. We pour to those ancestors who are represented in the thousands buried in all the square miles of where we stand, and who sit here buried before us in 400 caskets forged of wood from West Africa with Adinkra symbols. Each one of them, each woman, man, and child, symbolic of millions. The children of those who could not be killed, we pour, Ashe.
Ashe.
We pour to their children who somehow survived the hells of enslavement and fought for emancipation in the Caribbean, the French, British, Dutch Caribbean, who fought for emancipation in South America, who fought for emancipation in Central America, who fought the struggles we refer to as the Civil War in the United States, who came out of that, marched out of enslavement through Reconstruction, and found themselves making great migrations, eventually ending up in places like New York. Their children's children, who making a way for themselves became our great-great-grandparents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, our parents. Those who, when the first bones were discovered in this space, held their hands and said, "Stop! No more! We are here to speak for those who can no longer speak with their mouths." We pour for those ancestors, some of whom came to Howard University in 2004 and followed these caskets all the way back to New York. We pray to the great ancestors, the ones whose names we know and the ones whose names we don't. And at this moment, as we pour this libation, I would ask anyone who feels comfortable to say the name of someone in your bloodline who is no longer physically here, but who you know made it possible for you to be here. Go ahead, let's hear the names. Haywood Carr.
Porter Griffins.
Thomas Davis Jr.
Evelyn Glover.
We pour to the names that we hold collectively. Ganga Zumba in Brazil. Toussaint Louverture, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, and Henri Christophe in Haiti. We pour to the great Avengers, Nanny of the Maroons of Jamaica. We pour to the great ancestors, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass. Say the names that you study Who are the names of the ancestors that you have come to hold in your heart and your mind as you hope that you can do what they did for us, for your children and children's children? Let's say some of those famous names.
Malcolm X, Honorable Elijah Muhammad,
John Henry Clark, John Jackson, Muhammad. Jacob Carruthers. And finally, two final libations. We pour to those who make it possible for us to do what we do. We pour to these rangers who stand guardian over this sacred space. We pour to these Africans and these folks who have come from Howard University, the staff, the faculty, the administrators who brought us here today to bear witness. This is not a libation, but an affirmation, because their hearts still beat, their tongues still speak, their minds still think, and their minds still wish the best for us. We pour for all of those people who surrounded us on this journey today and made it possible for us to be here. We pour this affirmation of thanks, Ashe.
Ashe.
And finally, we pour to your children's children's children who will one day stand on this space and speak your name.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go and what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
I got murder on my mind. savage, no, he not no amateur. Baggage ain't answer, fuck the whole camera. Bitch, I'm a murderer. I might just kill him, but don't wanna kill him. But make him up, say he won't beef, we gon' grill the boy. I'm bleeding so good, I might dip his ass in it and spill the boy. Murder on my mind. Niggas hating, trying to knock me off my grind, but I can't let them do it. I got murder on my mind, bitch. I got murder on my mind.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.B. Connie. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
Welcome, welcome, family. This is your brother Kwasi. We have a wonderful program today. I hope everybody is well. I know in the Wisconsin area we had power outages, and that contributed to a lot of issues where some people still don't have their power up. But we have a wonderful show today. Hope everybody is well. Thank you guys for being on with us. Kitty Boot Camp. Kitty Boot Camp. And, you know, so you're saying COFA, Council of Milwaukee, we're looking to bring this wonderful program to you. We have some wonderful guests. Dr. James will introduce those guests for you. Again, it's going to be Kitty Boot Camp. Our children have been living the best of times and the worst of times. And there are greater opportunities for them to live their best of times. So this is a time that's more of them are involved in poor decision-making despite observing red flags or problem behavior, even as toddlers. We do not know what to do about it. Unfortunately, we trust the schools and doctors to help us readjust these behaviors. Our children lack compassion, reason, or thought. They are tragically committing heinous acts of violence and others are risking and losing their lives. So this is going to be a discussion that we're going to be having tonight. Before we go on with that, I'm going to introduce Sister Dee Dee Conley. Sister Dee Dee, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Brother Kwasi. Good evening, family.
Awesome. And we're going to do an answer.
We are so excited here to have today also Brother Charles Kwojo Robinson is with us.
Greetings, everyone. Glad to be with you.
Oh, my goodness. Sorry about that, Kwojo.
That's all right. I'm going to get you.
I know you will.
Now, my brothers.
And we are you have an ancestral profile for us, Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, I do. Wonderful, wonderful lady.
a wonderful sister, wonderful African sister. Anyway, her name is Dr. Margaret Morgan Lawrence. And Dr. Margaret Morgan Lawrence, I just want to say this first, she overcame plenty hurdles, including rejection by Cornell Medical School, which they had told her at one time that they had accepted a black person once before and that person died. And why they told her that, I don't know, whether they're trying to just get on her nerves and insult her or what, or whether they're just pouring salt in her wound. But the black man that they had hired, God rest his soul, the man had tuberculosis and he passed. But anyway, yes, Margaret Lawrence, the first African-American psychoanalogist and the first pediatrician psychiatrist in the United States. And she's the author of Young Inner City Families, Development of Ego Strength Under Stress, New York Behavior Publications in 1975. The mental health team in the schools of New York Behavior Publications in 1971. Lawrence was born in New York City, New York, on August 10th, 1914, the second child of Elizabeth Smith Morgan, a school teacher, and Sandy Alonzo Morgan, and he was a minister. 2 years earlier, the Morgans had a baby son whom they called Candyman, and he was born with some type of illness, and he only lived to be like 11 months old, but his presence was so strong in the family. When he passed, the family, of course, they were just distraught, just very hurt. Anyway, that influenced Lawrence's early psychological life and her career. Lawrence grew up in Wicksburg, Mississippi, where she attended Wicksburg Institution Industrial School and Wicksburg High School. By the age of 14, she knew she wanted to be a doctor. For the better schooling, she returned to New York, where she lived with extended family and finished her secondary studies at this high school for girls in Harlem. In 1932, at the age of 18, the National Council there was a church awarded Lawrence a scholarship to attend Cornell's College at the Arts and Science. She completed her undergraduate degree in 1936. Although they did deny her, I just want to throw that in. They did deny her they rejected her from going to that college. I just thought that was awful. This woman here was just so, she was just so extraordinary, y'all. She was just wonderful. Anyway, I apologize, but I just had to get that in, how they rejected her. Anyway, she pursued her career instead at Columbia University Medical School, graduating in 1940 with encouragement from Dr. Charles Drew, the only African-American physician on Columbia's faculty. Lawrence went on to be a pediatrician internship at Harlem Hospital. On June 5th, 1938, in her second year of medical school, Lawrence married Charles Radford Lawrence II, a teacher and political activist who would become a sociologically professor and leader at the Episcopal Church. The couple had three children. The couple had three children. Charles R. Lawrence III, an attorney. He's an attorney in San Francisco, and Dr. Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, a Harvard sociology and a reverend, and he's in Pennsylvania. Lawrence earned a Master of Public Health degree at Columbia in 1943, working with Dr. Benjamin Spock from 1943 to 1946. She taught pediatricians and public health at Maryhead Medical College in Nashville, Tennessee. In 1948, with Dr. Viola Bernard, supported and mentorship, Lawrence was certified as a physician's analysis by Columbia University. And then a child psychiatrist, Dr. David Levy, was her supervisor, and Dr. Eugene, he was one of her mentors. Therefore, she worked as a pediatrician psychiatrist, paying special attention to African-American families, Eagles and Strength. Lawrence spent more than two decades as chief of development psychiatry service for infants and children at Harlem Hospital, where she was in private practice, and she had an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at Columbia University Medical School. All the while, a community activist and member of the Peace Fellowship of the Episcopal Church. Dr. Lawrence moved to Boston to be closer to her daughter, where she lived at an assistant living faculty till she passed away on December 4th, 2019. She was 105 years old. She is survived by three children, six grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren. Thank you, family. Can I just say one more thing? I just want to get out. You know, when they rejected her at Cornell University, but then while she was on the university, she was going to, there was another school she was going to, but she could not, the university would not let her live in the dorms. So what she had to do, one of the white families allowed her to live in their attic. So she became like their maid, you know, and she would get up and clean and fix them breakfast before she went to school, y'all. And then she would go to school, then she would leave school to go back and get in her maid clothes and prepare lunch and stuff, and then back to school. This woman was this woman is something else. And it's so, you know what, this is really worth reading about her. Especially, there's another article in here if anybody wants to go to it, and it says Health Matters, and it said it happened here, Dr. Morgan Lawrence. This is so, y'all, this is so good. It's heartbreaking, but it'll make you jump for joy when you read this article about what this woman overcame. And when they said this woman overcame many hurdles, wow. But that was just the tip of it, y'all. But thank you very much, family, for letting me get that out.
Well, thank you, Dee Dee. We really enjoyed that bit of information. And it's important for us to recognize that we've had people who've been working in the trenches, working in these areas for many years, and this information hasn't been known to many of us, so I'm so happy to provide that information.
Dr. James, I just want to thank you for even bringing that to my attention. I mean, thank you so much. And that I'm going to pass that on to my grandchildren, especially my granddaughter. I'm going to pass that on to both of them and anybody else that wants to listen. That's just wonderful. It's just so much out here that we just don't know about, or we just don't hear about.
Well, we're glad to know that we've got some more Dr. Lawrences that are have followed her and will continue with that work, and which leads us to our recognition of our two guests for today. And I am just so excited to welcome into our midst our own Baba Alfonso Watkins. Brother Alfonso Watkins is a licensed psychotherapist. He is formerly of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's worked with the Milwaukee Public Schools and other mental health facilities. And he's had a private practice, the Wake Up Program, providing mental health services for adolescents and families. Despite all of those years that he has spent in his hometown of Milwaukee and a tour as a Marine, he relocated to Phoenix, Arizona, where he serves as the clinical director of the Desert Cove Recovery Center in Scottsdale, Arizona, providing alcohol and drug rehabilitation services. He has been healing our people from spiritual, psychological, and physical perspectives. And he's gone over a number of topics in his study of psychology. And the topic that has been of the greatest interest of late has been the benefits of biochemical and nutrient therapy. So he's looked at some of the work of others related to mental health issues. And Baba Alfonso Watkins, we are so happy to see you here this evening.
Yeah.
I say, may I have permission to speak, elders?
Yes, please.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Once again, it's always a pleasure to be amongst family. Thank you for those kind words, Dr. James. It's good to hear everybody's voices. It's a blessing to be amongst the living at this time, so I'm truly honored to be part of this conversation this evening.
Thank you so much, Brother Alfonso. We also have a guest with us, and maybe you'll say a little bit on the other end of the spectrum. We have Mr. Suleiman Habil, and I am so delighted to welcome Mr. Habil. Mr. Habil is from Robbins, Illinois, and I have known him for, 15 years or so. He attended St. John's Northwestern Military Academy in Delafield, Wisconsin. And it was there at St. John's that Mr. Habil, as a student, learned some of the rigors involved in the military, which included the work with one's body, the work with one's mind, and for academic excellence. And he's been particularly passionate about the issues pertaining to our youth and concerned about some of the observations he's made, as well as those thoughts that he's had and experience he's had with some of the young people as it relates to decision-making, as well as the impact of some of those decisions resulting in problems in the criminal justice area. He wants to see these young people do well, and so we're very interested in hearing from Mr. Habil in a bit about his thoughts, because I've been very concerned, and I'm sure many of us have been concerned as we look at what the educational experience has been, particularly for our young people who are lacking in information about our history, to know about their greatness and their strengths, to know who preceded them. This has not been provided for them in the schools. And unfortunately, few of us have provided this kind of information in our homes. We are also concerned about seeing the increasing numbers of our youth becoming involved with criminal activity, and there seems to be a significant increase throughout the country where our youth are becoming involved with some pretty devastating types of activities that not only bring heartache to our community, but certainly result in some of their loss, some of the deaths of them, as well as the members of the community. So we've got to think about what strategies we need to implement to try to figure out how to bring about some healing in our community. And I'm certain with this body that's here with us today, we've got some folks who've got some thoughts about it. And I'm sure some of our listeners have some thoughts, because we cannot leave this to somebody else to solve. We have the expertise. We have the individuals who have had the formal training as well as in the trenches training on how to remedy some of these problems. And I hope that we're going to be able to explore this in greater detail this evening. And I'd like to open up to our brother Charles Quojo. I'm sure you have some thoughts in this area that you'd like to put to our guests related to these issues of children's behavior, as well as how it leads to maybe leading to some of the problems that they're having, interacting in our community, as well as what some of the thoughts are about what we need to do about it. Brother Charles.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. I was curious about how much money we're spending on some of these problems that you just mentioned. What's at stake? We're spending $80 billion in incarceration. I just Googled this a minute ago. $154,000 per gunshot. $154,000 per gunshot, $12,000 per cut, $13 billion of medical public services. So, you know, not only are the effects of a lot of this crime that comes from our youth affecting families and themselves, but it's also having a great impact on our economy. And I was just, you know, recalling when I was a kid growing up, we had the Boy Scouts of America, and even though I lived in inner city, I was involved in the Scout program, you know, on my way to become an Eagle Scout. And so I wasn't impacted as much by the things happening around me, although when I was younger, I was running around with a teenage gang, because the gang members actually lived downstairs. We rented from his family, and I would sneak out the back door and be with them as well. And then 2 years later, I was involved in the scouting program. So I, you know, this Kitty boot camp, I'm just real curious about that. I don't know a lot about Kitty boot camp. I'm just wondering if it actually deals with the underlying causes, some of the underlying problems like trauma in these children's bodies. That would be my number one question of our two guests.
Brother Suleiman.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing? I want to say thank you for introducing me. You said them kind words. I want to say thank you for everybody for asking. God bless. One of the things I want to start off with is that I had an occupation as a correctional officer in a level 5 maximum security prison in Missouri. And this prison is where most people were serving life. And one of the common things I heard from inmates that I talked to is that they suffer from some form of trauma early on, whether they not having both parents in their life, whether it's some type of form of trauma. As of today, that same trauma is going on with our children. Our children need to find outlets and ways to actually communicate the trauma that they suffer from. Not only that, not only the children, that the parents need to find healing and actually solve some of the problems they are dealing with, because children emulate the parents. If the parents is not right, how the kids is going to get right? Of course, a call to action, us as a people, African-American people, us as parents, we need to start healing process. We need to start talking to our children and find out what's the root cause of their behavior problems. Whether they mad that they don't get enough attention, whether they mad that of this, their father is not in their life, whether it's best to vocalize. Once you start the healing process, your mind is open to change. Once you start the healing process, your mind is open to change. A call to action is for us, not only as parents, but us as people, African-American people, heal each other. Look out for each other. The most critical ways gangs infiltrate the neighborhood is because of African-American males needing camaraderie, needing brotherhood. That's one way gangs infiltrate neighborhoods, because they trick them and lead them on the blind loyalty aspect. But if they have loyalty and love for not only their parents, but from their neighbor, in any holy book you read, together we can make an impact not only as parents, but as for our younger children, to optimize our potential to be greater persons that we are.
Brother Alfonso, I know you have some thoughts on this subject coming from Milwaukee. There's certainly been some challenges that you've worked with people on, and share with us your thoughts.
Yes, Queen Mother. I'd like to start off by saying there's a science to how we are being socially engineered to function mm-hmm. in these mm-hmm. Dysfunctional behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about healing, we first must identify what is causing the wound. And what is causing the wound is our lack of understanding that we are at war. We tend to think that we are living amongst a people who have an element of them who have our best interests at mm-hmm. heart, and we attempt to navigate and negotiate and compromise with this element of the people that we live with. So at some point, there has to be a realization, like you said, Queen Mother James, we have to set some boundaries in how we are going to engage with these Europeans and our, I'm going to say, community socialization with them. Right now, the conversation is this critical race theory. So we have to understand that we are really the only people that accept allowing somebody else to educate and socialize our children.
Mm-hmm.
These Europeans have drew the line with what is going to be taught to their children. And right, wrong, or indifferent, how we perceive what is a lie, it is still their history. We can't, so when we talk about kitty boot camp and we talk about the reality of what our children need, we have to be deliberate in what our children are going to be educated, what type of pedagogy is going to be used to educate them, and what is going to be the foundation of the curriculum to move them into the 21st century. So we can identify, we can have the conversation, but like the young brother was saying, the call to action is we must activate a board, or I'm going to say some boundaries in how our children are interacting with this society and in this socialization of what America is saying it is. So I'm just saying from my perspective and my experience with going through these institutions, getting these letters behind my name. Like I said, I got a master's degree in educational psychology, a bachelor's degree in community education. I'm a licensed drug and alcohol counselor. So I've got a range of experiences coming through these institutions, but also I'm from the street. So I know I know that there's a reality, then there is these illusions of these things that we want to participate in. So, so the conversation for Kitty Boot Camp is a reality from an African center perspective, is a rites of passage. So part of our conversation, as we talk about how to prepare children, we have to create or redesign or formulate or use some form of a rites of passage so our children to learn how to have a moral compass. So I'm going to just leave it there, and we can have some further conversation as it relates to recognizing that there are some critical stages of human development that we are not tapped into to make sure that our children are prepared as they transition into these critical stages of development. And how do we create the pedagogy, the curriculum, to help shape these young, brilliant minds to move them into the 21st century?
Thank you so much, Brother Alfonso. And Brother Kwanzi, I know you have some thoughts, and I wish you would roll with this, especially with our discussion about where this takes us if we don't get it together from the standpoint of the criminal justice system.
Wow. I think, both of our guests laid it out. That's what we're dealing with. When Brother Alfonso made the comment about critical race theory, and we understand what the problem is, but not identifying what's actually happening and what's continuing to go on. We talk about healing. If I'm punching you in the face every day, and you've got some old wounds, those old wounds, they don't even come to what you're dealing with right now. You still have to deal with the here and now. And we're just consumed with so much. It's just a difficult thing. And from the law enforcement perspective, there's just so much denial in what's actually happening there. I had a conversation with someone earlier today, and they were talking about we need the police. And I said, because they talk about defunding the police department. And, in the police departments, all of that came from, slave catchers, back in the 1600s when they, abolished slavery. When you think about that and what they do today and the problems that we're seeing, and they talk about different solutions, when we talk about law enforcement, one of the things they say, we need more training. And I say, well, the training, you're still not addressing or identifying what specifically is the problem. When a plane crashes, you look at that black box and you determine what caused that crash, and you want to make sure it doesn't happen again. And with a lot of these situations, we know what that problem is, but we're not looking at that black box. We're going in other directions, and like Brother Alfonso said, and we're at war, and not knowing or realizing that ugly situation, and we're not preparing ourselves. And so all these other things that are going on, are not really helping us in the battle, in the type of battle that we're in. So we really have to educate our people and prepare them in a way more suitable than what's going on now, and especially by those that are contribute to the problem.
So where do we go? We can't turn to the Europeans, as you say, to solve the problem. They don't have the interest, they don't have the knowledge, but we clearly now have those kinds of individuals who have the training to get the information. We've got a lot of the information. We have the data. So what are some of the things that we can do? And that may allow us to talk a little bit more about one strategy. There probably are many others, but where does the concept of Kitty Boot Camp, Suleiman, come in? What does that look like, and what can it look like in terms of having a strategy to keep our children away from the criminal justice system and expecting that to be the place to solve the problem?
It really starts at home. They got an old saying, everything starts at home. I mentioned earlier about the healing process, not only for the kids, but for the parents. Us as African Americans, us healing. And that's coming over any discrepancies, any mental blocks that we might have, any downfalls, anything. And then we emulate a good persona, good vibes, good energy, positive vibes for our children to emulate. And not only that, that the healing process for us as Black people is working together, because we've been mentally enslaved ever since slavery. Not to be on my soapbox or anything, but Willie Lynch, the famous Willie Lynch letter. We are still suffering from that today. To all people that now don't know about the Willie Lynch letter, please Google it. Please Google it. Willie Lynch letter. We have to get over that enslaved mentality. And not only that, working together, we need to open up our own facilities, us as African American people.
That's right.
We need to believe in each other and believe in our message. And we need to work together, because the other races is not going to teach our children what they need to know. We not only need to educate our children at home, but also by each other, for each other in our own institution. And we need to support each other and open up our own institution. Thank you.
Well, Suleiman, you're probably the youngest father among the group, and you have noticed, even in your, I think it's a 4-year-old, you've noticed some behaviors that you felt needed some attention. Tell us how you have addressed some of those behaviors.
I just being there, taking the time. Most parents don't make the time. My son is 5. He's about to be 5 this year, so he's 4. So some of the issues he was having really is wanted over his parents in his life. He's in a split home right now. So one of his wants and needs is saying that I want both my parents to pay me. And I basically had to let him get that trauma off his chest, because he needed that. He needed that for his growth and development, to be able to ask questions, I feel like it's too personal. If it's out of the universe, ask them questions, because not only you helping yourself, it's therapeutic. You are getting all the trauma, or you are asking about your trauma. So I basically had to explain to him that in a perfect world, me and your mother will be together. But there are factors right now that's not conducive for us to be underneath the same roof.
Do you think he understands that?
No, I'll put it in baby terms. But I just said that, but he don't understand that. He don't understand.
Even if you put that in baby terms, that's still hard for a little young child, to try to collect. Because, a lot of time, I mean, like you said, he's used to seeing mommy and daddy. A lot of these kids need that structure. A lot of our children don't have that structure. Some of us didn't even have that structure. But nowadays, since everybody is putting the cart before the horse, and then after it's all, then after the smoke is cleared, you go your way and I go mine. And then now here we got this precious soul here looking around saying, what just happened? Or a lot of kids, because they may even sometimes hear their parents arguing. My grandma used to always tell me, be careful what you say and do, because every shut eye is not a sleep eye. So a lot of times you think the kid asleep or not hearing or listening, and they hear you fussing. Or a lot of times children feel like it's their fault. Well, maybe if I hadn't have been born, they wouldn't be like this. You know, but just all kind of little stuff go through their little mind. Kids want both their parents just like we did when we were coming up, when we were little. If we didn't have both parents, well, where's dad?
That's the same trauma that everybody suffers from. Everybody suffers from some trauma.
Exactly.
But the hump is actually voicing the trauma. Thank you. I want to say thank you for bringing it up. See, what the mindset my son did is he voiced it. And I was all ears. I was receptive, attentive, and I was learning. And I gave him feedback to where he could be able not to bottle that in. See, most kids in both other generations, they was taught to bottle their emotions. And some kids today, in this generation, they don't express what they are feeling. They don't express properly what they are feeling. So they be like, oh, I'm mad, so let me just go punch somebody in the face and stay in. Instead of saying, oh, I'm mad, let me talk about it. So, yes, if life was perfect, me and his mother would be together, but that's another situation. But the cars is already built. I'm sitting at that table, and I'm not going to get up on that table. So I'm going to be in my son's life one way or another.
I'd like to hold on to those thoughts
because that brother Kwaze is going to be giving us a sponsor message, if you would, so that we can go to the top of the hour.
Yes. Yes. EDOC Advice, it is a website created to provide a place to go to get answers to your health or medical concerns. The questions are answered by health professionals and those who are knowledgeable about helping you make decisions about your personal health that make sense to you. We'll go to www.edocadvice.com. And EDOC, we do not replace your health professionals or provide your care, but we can help you to become a better consumer so that you can get the best information and make a truly informed decision. Now, we network with other health professionals throughout the country and bring that information to you. And we are looking for sponsors. Do you have a service you want others to know about? You have written a book we need to read? Consider becoming a sponsor. Email the Black Reality Think Tank at Sankofa_think@outlook.com. Contributions to support our broadcast can be made to Cash App, $IRVANAINSTI, and PayPal, and Sankofa, think@outlook.com. And so we're getting close to the top of the hour. That concludes our sponsor announcement, and when we do come back, the lines will be open in a bit, and the call-in number is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. So at that time, we'll take calls for comments or questions, or just continue to listen. All right, thank you.
There is no such thing as a race. Nature created no races. Man created races, racial classifications, and he had his own reason for doing it. Now, who benefited from this artificial creation at first? Who benefits from it now? Now, let's look at the historical roots of this whole thing, and you're not going to understand it until you understand the implications, the far-reaching effects of the opening up of the so-called New World, Christopher Columbus and other thugs coming, suppressing the Indians, and finding a justification for this kind of thing. Let's look at Europe in the 15th and the 16th century, because racism has its roots in that second rise of Europe in the 15th and the 16th century. They had to justify what they were going to do to most of mankind. They were about to take over the whole world. Now, there's a myth about an argument about whether the world was round or flat. That's an old wives' tale. The European had gained enough knowledge and had enough guns, and he had been hungry enough within the body of Europe until he decided that he was going to go out and take the world, be it round or flat. Now, in order to understand the religious basis of racism, we have to go back to a papal bull that the Pope issued in 1455 in an argument between Portugal and Spain. He turned to them impatiently and said, "You are both authorized to reduce to servitude all infidel people." And it just so happens that most of the so-called infidels were non-European people, non-white people. Europe not only had its basis for racism, it had its basis for the slave trade, and this same basis would be good in the colonial system that followed. Racism was created to justify the slave trade, to justify the colonial system, and to justify the utter ruthlessness that had to go into the making of modern capitalism.
Really gonna miss you. It's really gonna be different without you. Time is gonna be hard and slow for the rest of my life. Gonna be thinking about you. Yes, I am. Time came when you had to go. There's a higher power that we answer to, and you heard him calling your name. Really gonna miss you. Everything about you, your smiling face. really gonna miss you.
You are listening to the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee with your host, Dr. Janine James, Brother Kwasi Kraft, and Sister D.B. Compton. Sankofa Council Radio Broadcast is an affiliate of the Black Reality Think Tank, and it airs on the Time for an Awakening radio platform. Reach out to them at Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. I repeat, Sankofa Council MKE at gmail.com. All of our programs are archived, so just go to www.timeforanawakening, access the search portal, and type in the name of the program you desire to review.
All right, we are back. We are back. Again, our lines are open. It looks like we have some calls.
Are you there?
We have a call at 678-923.
Questions or comments?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I would love to hear more about how conflict resolution and restorative justice or restorative practices can have a positive impact on our community.
Okay.
That sounds like my friend Cy from Atlanta. Is that Cy?
Yes.
Thank you for joining in the conversation.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Well, we have Brother Alfonso or Brother Suleiman. Whoever wants to take a shot at that, go right ahead.
I'll take a shot at it. Part of the conversation around restorative justice and conflict resolution, and how that's being utilized. First, when we're trying to restore justice, first the people that we are practicing this with have to understand what is just. From a psychotherapist perspective, I've been able to help individuals modify some of their thought processes to change their behavior. But if they don't have a place to practice it, that's where the difficulties come in at. So when we talk about raising our children and teaching them these techniques, when they attempt to practice that with the police, it's not respected. So part of, once again, is understanding the things that we teach or prepare our children to utilize it amongst themselves, but when they go outside of their community or even inside their community, attempting to practice that with those who are supposed to be defending and protecting them is where we have some conflict at. So I think we can teach our children those concepts, and you can teach them, the adults, those concepts. But in order for them to be practiced, the larger society has to look at us from a perspective of respecting us.
Yes, thank you.
May I respond to that, please?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I wanted to share two thoughts. The first thought is, in most cases where our children are trained in Eurocentric paradigms of education, conflict resolution and restorative practices is a misnomer, and it's a harmony model. We have to remember, as your audio has shared, what John Henry Clark taught us, that we have to be responsible handlers of power. And we have to also be mindful that if we teach our ancient, as you all are doing an excellent job in listening today, has been very helpful to me in understanding this, is that the language is not an adequate language to describe a method of resolution. We are our brothers and sisters keepers, and we help one another. So when they say conflict resolution and restorative practices, we can't let that language trip us up. So the harmony is usually in their favor and not ours. So we need for them to break that down, define what the conflict is, who's defining it, how they are defining it, who are the decision makers. Am I being evaluated or estimated or considered with my peers? Who, in fact, has the control? Who's making the laws and why? And so we also have to look at reparative justice. And because we come from the perspective of the African concept of Ubuntu, a person is a person through other persons. We love and care for one another. We don't have a destructive sense about us in many ways. But I wanted to also hear if Dr. Charles Robinson had some views on his approach to conflict resolution and restorative practice, the misnomer used by the Eurocentric paradigm construct when we get caught up in it. What do we need to say and do amongst each other to know that we are in the community, even though they're using the wrong language for us?
Mm-hmm. Brother Charles?
Yeah, what I've been discovering recently, there's a lot of literature out on trauma in the body. And some of you probably read the book written by Resma Mannequin, My Grandmother's Hands, and now The Body Keeps a Score. And they have the ACEs questionnaire that, if you score in more than 4, you can predict some of the behaviors that that's going to show up in your life. And so I'm really curious about bringing in the practices in order to address what Brother Alfonso said earlier about the moral compass, to look to see, how do we restore that moral compass? And I think, there's some Afrocentric ways that we can do that. Maladoma Sommei, in his book, The Healing Wisdom of Africa, addresses that. And so maybe through the rites of passage, if you could merge a rites of passage program that will address some of the problems that we have and the violence that shows up with a kitty boot camp, then I would be interested in looking to see what that looks like. But we, in our healing empowerment circle with the men that we're working with, we have a virtual healing and empowerment circle that that some of you know about, and we have part 3 coming up in September. And we're, helping these fathers to look to see how they can address what they need to address to be effective parents. In Wisconsin, teenage children in that age category, only 7% in the black family, only 7% live with both biological parents. So the traditional family structure doesn't exist anymore. And the programs that we used to have, like the scouting programs, they don't exist anymore. And with, children don't have access to both parents. That's a problem. There's a book written that addresses that, The Power of Showing Up. It actually shows scientifically that infants' brains are actually, they're affected depending on if the parents are present or not. And then there's The Body keeps the score. It documents how the trauma in our bodies, of course, affects our behavior. So we need to find a way to address that moral compass through parenting, co-parenting. It takes a village, mentoring, and when we can bring that together, it takes a village. It takes a village.
I appreciate that, Brother Charles.
Can I just add something to that piece?
Yes,
with the trauma of clinically, and then from the psychiatric perspective, as we talk about trauma, we have to realize from a historical perspective, our people have always dealt with trauma, and we have always been able to produce positive and productive human beings living in these oppressive conditions. So I'm just saying that to say, let's not get caught up in that word trauma and how they're using it to go into talking about epigenetics and the impact that it's having on our cellular structure. Because we've always been able to overcome that. But I think the piece that we're lacking at is understanding chemical and biological warfare that is taking place on us. And so part of the conversation has to be understanding what has happened to our psychobiological functioning as it relates to the poisons that we are being exposed to in food or digest.
Thank you, brother. I can't hardly contain myself.
So when we talk about trauma, let's not let the Europeans continue to control the narrative as it relates to what is happening with us as it relates to responding to their assault on us.
Great.
Part of what our issue is, we continue to allow them to come in and diagnose the problem that they have created.
And then they give you an antidote for it.
So I'm just saying there's another lens that we have to look through as it relates to when we talk about trauma in genetics and how our cellular structure and what our body is containing. Because historically, once again, even under the conditions of oppression, Jim Crow, slavery, we still produce geniuses. So what is happening now in our community that our children are functioning at these dysfunctional, maladjusted, abnormal behaviors? What are we seeing? And what is the cause of that? It is not necessarily always have to do with the trauma or not having a parent in a home. It has something to do with the chemicals that our children and that we've been exposed to at this time.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked
just
about...
Just real quick. Brother Afonso, what's your call to action? What's your solution? What you think that could help solve some of these problems in the youth are experiencing?
Well, one of the things I think we have to look at is that anytime you allow your child to sit in front of a TV and watch Grand Theft Auto and Call of Duty, your child is being programmed and assimilated to perform those acts. So part of, once again, is understanding when we talk about what at these critical stages of our children's development, they are being socially engineered to steal cars and to kill. So that's the first thing I want to say about, as we talk about how do we help prepare and protect our children. The second thing we have to understand is there's a science, there's a form or a treatment modality called biochemistry nutrient therapy. And biochemistry nutrient therapy is where our children and us, we need to get our blood, it's your lead blood levels checked.
Yes.
Because we have been exposed to so much lead that is impacting our brain development. And then the diet that our children and that we're on, the it's called methyl group, these high sugary and starchy diets are impacting the brain development at these critical times of our human development. So when you think about from a historical perspective, we wasn't raised on McDonald's and Burger King and eating out of the microwave. We were eating home-cooked meals, and those home-cooked meals were nutritionists. They had nutritionists. So I'm just saying, so to answer your question, those are just two things I would suggest that part of what we need to understand is what is happening to our children and to us chemically, and then the other piece is how we are being social engineered by the things that we're watching on TV and that we've been exposed to through the phone and technology.
Yes. Thank you, Brother Alfonso. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We have a caller at 913-209. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yes, I do. I have both a question and a comment. I'll do the comment first, if that's okay.
Okay. Yes.
Listening to the past conversation, you know, a lot of things that affect our community, I like to refer to it as our nation, as opposed to our community, because we are definitely separate nations. And the sooner we realize that, I think it'll give us a better position from which to advance. Now, the brother that was just speaking, you know, I'm sitting here looking out my window. Okay, nature always tells you what you need to do. That's why our forefathers were so successful. They followed natural order. And they did not let those prestiges from outside come and interfere. You know, they would kill things that came among them that didn't suit their community, you know, their nation, their culture. You know, children are born nowadays. When I was born, I had don't remember it, but I know it happened because I saw it with my siblings. My mother fed me, you know, not infant meal, not some formula. Like right. Nature already dictated. My mother fed me. And then she had another son later on, and I was weaned, and she fed him. And a lot of people from my generation, you know, 60 years old or so, you know, we had real food.
Right.
Yeah. What we're getting now are basically a diet of chemicals. Now, I mean, you cannot take a human body that was intended to eat naturally, and by that I mean the things that grow up out of the ground,
right?
And flow freely, and you don't have to pay for it, like water. You can't feed a human body that and don't expect some severe damage physically, mentally, and most certainly spiritually. I've seen people go nuts because they can't get a donut, and what they really are is craving sugar. They don't get coffee in the morning, and they are jittery like they are a drug addict. They are a drug addict. You know, we don't look at these things that we can do ourselves as opposed to look. I'm not saying that there shouldn't be regimens and programs, but the real problem, I won't say the problem because I like to talk about the solution. The solution is we have to individually make a stand, draw a line in the sand, and say, don't cross this. Whoever it is, I was blessed, my wife and I were blessed to have 9 children. We homeschooled our children because there is no way in hell I was going to let these people take my precious baby's minds and destroy them. So even though neither my wife or I were certified teachers, we certainly knew how to read, and we knew our ways to the library, and I had my own library that I had collected over the years, and I had some books that had been bequeathed to me by my grandparents, et cetera. And so we homeschooled our children until the very last year. We let them go to school in 12th grade to get their certifications, and they all tested off the charts. Now, that's not saying that we did anything special. What we did was natural. You don't find robins nurturing cardinals. You don't find wolves nurturing sheep. You don't find fish nurturing seal. So we are the only people we are the only beings on this planet that have to pay to live. You ever thought about that?
Hmm.
Sheep don't pay rent. Point. Lions don't have to pay their mortgage. Nobody pays health insurance, but we are supposedly the most advanced species on the planet, but we don't act like it. So until we take personal control over our lives, and I'm concerned because some people are just not going to make it. You know, in nature, there's also a thing called culling the herd. And the strong do survive. History teaches you that. Now, I'm not casting aspersions on anyone. I'm like from the Funkadelic era. They got a song called Everybody's Gonna Make It This Time. That used to be my pledge of honor. But I don't know that is the case. What I do know is I can do what I can do to make sure my children are under my, well, they're grown now. My youngest is 17 years old. Matter of fact, he's the most intelligent, if I can, would put him in a category. But these are not unusual children. If you see them, they're just like you and I. But my wife and I made an agreement. Our children are going to be breastfed. They were going to be homeschooled. And we were going to teach them morals and principles. And so if it doesn't come from an individual effort, it's really just fluff. You know, Elijah Muhammad made a statement that you can have a school up under a tree. You know, tradition, you know, when you think school, you think big building, you think water pipes, you think bills. You can have schools in homes. All it takes is the will to do it. And I have often thought that if black people in this country took their children, I'm so thankful for Corona, if they were to take their children out of public schools and be forced to teach them like natural beings do on this planet, no other species allows another species to teach its children how to grow up to be what it is. If they would do that, I think in a generation, we could recover from them. I really do. And that's not a long time, though it is a long time in an individual's life. But there's an old saying that, you know, a wise man plants a tree that he will never sit in the shade of. And if we don't have that idea to do something for our children, our legacy, and waiting on white folks to do it who've already – I look at white folks like when I go to get a loan at a bank. When I go in there, if I got $70,000 in their account and I've had three bankruptcies in the last 3 years, they're not going to give me a penny.
Right.
Not based on my potential. They judge me based on my past. But we want to be so forgiving and so inclusive and always got to have white folks' approval. If it's a holiday, we got to go to white folks to ask them, can we celebrate Robert F. Williams' birthday? You know, if it's a holiday, can we have Elijah Muhammad Day? Just take it. Get it around. Let people know and take off. But I want to make this point, and I don't want to take your line. But, you know, Corona has done something. You know, it says, I'm not a Christian, but I do read scripture. And it says the Lord works in mysterious ways. And we, as your program, it is time for an enlightening and awakening. And sometimes nature will put before you the lesson. You got to make a decision nowadays. Do you want to take a Corona shot or do you want your children free? You know, want to take, you know what I'm saying? These are things that we as individuals have to make a decision on. There's no way in the hell I could love my children, even if they were infants, and allow them to take poison to try to ward off something that's very natural. Viruses are not unnatural. But health, good health is natural. And that's really where it starts. So this is what I'm saying in my opinion. I'm not saying this as any authority on anything. I pay attention to things and I read. And when I don't know something, I go read and find out so I won't be as ignorant as I was of it tomorrow as I was today. And I pay attention to people and I listen to what they say and I also listen to what they don't say. I'm going to end with this. My grandfather shared something with me a long time ago. I was maybe 10 years old. And, you know, I was conflicted about right and wrong and how, you know, he said, boy, he would always call me boy. I don't even know if he knew my name. But he would say, boy, he said, this is how you find out if something is right or wrong. He said, just imagine it multiplied all over the earth among all the people. If it's going to make the people better, then it's right. If it's going to make them worse, then it's wrong. And it took me years to really let that fall in the proper slot inside my brain. But it makes so much sense.
Yes.
But we cannot include the enemy in our plans. We don't have any space to have his approval for us to live our lives.
That's right.
These are our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to take up a lot of time. I'm really appreciating the program. It's the first time I I actually had my gadget number in my cell phone, and I was scanning through some stuff, and I went to one of these online places where you can listen to the radio, and there you all were. So, as they say, Lord works in strange and mysterious ways, you know. But I really appreciate this program. But I'm going to say, finally, diet is most important. And the brother who's speaking, if you ain't eating right, you can't think right. If you can't think right, you can't solve your problems. You can't solve your problems, you're going to live your life in hell. And that's what it comes down to.
Well, I thank you so much for your call, and that was just so spot on. And I think about, you know, everything that's been going on, and I know when COVID hit, but even prior to when COVID hit, we used to have our meetings at Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and Dr. James would make us some of the most healthiest meals. And it was paramount that we ate a certain way to build and boost our immune system. And Queen Mother did the same thing with getting nutritious things out. And I know Brother Alfonso remembers so much when we would be at the different schools. And at the schools, they knew that it was paramount that these kids ate a proper nutritious meals. And one of the things that they would do is they would have these meals where we would go pick kids up to make sure that they could make it to school in the morning, because we knew it was important for them to have a good breakfast to start the day. You know, and a lot of the meals they even had in the evening, the school stayed open until about 8 o'clock at night to make sure that some of these kids ate a meal at night. Because so many times, you know, we got these kids, they're just not functioning because, you know, they're dealing with starvation issues and things like that. But again, when we talk about those soft kills and, you know, with the poisonous foods that we eat, you know, it takes a while for it to get in, you know, like all the red dyes in the food. We talk about water. You know, we talk about what, 1840 was the last time that we had our pipes changed, you know, our sewage, I mean, for our water filtration. And so we're talking, that's supposed to be done every 60 years. And so all this contamination that's going on, and so when we talk about that soft kill, because it takes time, and they still haven't released the information in regards to the damage that is done to these kids, then this is like 15 years ago in regards to that. And but some of that is what we're dealing with today, because we know that there is no reversal issues in regards to the damage from lead. So you're talking about brain and kidney damage, high blood pressure, you know, all those type of issues. And again, those are those soft kills. And what are we talking about, a 20-year program for that? So that was just so spot on to bring those issues up. And again, appreciate you, caller.
That was excellent.
thank you. If I can end with this one thing, you know, I found out in the 1980s that the United States Pentagon became in charge of the school lunch program. I'm going to leave you with that. Okay. I'm going to leave you with that.
Yes. Well, one of the things that, you know, I guess we have to look at is who profits from that. And, you know, and so when you look at the red meats and, you know, what they told us we needed to eat to be healthy. And now, you know, you have so many people that are pulling away from the meats because of so many things that they're doing with the meat. And I'm not, you know, I have changed my diet a lot based on some health issues I found out, you know, within my family. And I had some bad eating habits, and I made some changes the last 20 years, and I feel a lot better. But again, that is that slow kill, so to speak. You know, the smoking, you know, for some people, you know, they can smoke a pack a day and, you know, live till they're 80. And some people might smoke a little less than that by the time they're 40 years old, you know. And so, but we have a lot of different issues and things that's going on. So it's not one set thing that's going on. Or one set answer. I mean, we have multiple issues that we're dealing with, and we have so many people out here that's trying to, make things better. And so I appreciate, you know, everybody being here, because we have so many warriors that are out there. We have Andre Lee Alice that does the boot camp and also does the nutritional thing where they're teaching young people how to grow food and the value of eating nutritiously. You know, and so we have a lot of those things going on where these food gardens are popping up. And again, we're trying to promote the health and wealth of our community. So, any comments, Brother Alfonso? Or thoughts?
I just like to just, as we continue to have this conversation, and like you said, there's so many different factors and variables that we are combating or addressing. But one I think we have to recognize is when we're talking about the criminal justice system and the social structure of it, and understanding, having an overstanding of how legislation, laws, and policies shape deviant behavior. I'm going to say that again. How legislation, laws, and policies shape deviant behavior. So as we had this conversation and we talk about our children and we recognize that there are certain elements and vices that they have to face, we have to at some point take a stance on not allowing the law, is what they call it, to engage with our children and violate their rights. We have to put a buffer in between our children and the law. And a lot of times I think we have a issue with taking that type of stance. Our children are out of order. Yes, they are. But we going to have to put a buffer in between them and the system, because the system is not going to help them.
No.
So as men, like Suleiman was talking about when he mentioned the men, we have a responsibility to take ownership of what's happening in our community. We're going to have to solve this as black men with the support of our black women. But this is only going to change when black men take a stance to get out there and address these young brothers, to get them to understand that their behavior is out of order, and we have to redirect them in a direction, the ones that we can redirect.
Yes.
In another direction with some resources.
Let me go ahead and add on that. The prisons I was working at was definitely overpopulated with the most brilliant-minded young brothers. And it was young too. It was young too, and a few old wise brothers too, and it kind of frustrates me that us as a society are just letting this happen. Okay, for instance, let me explain. Most governors, senators, and high authorities, high industries invest in prisons. Prisons is on the market, black market. You can get money out of prisons. Not only they own the prisons, they own the media, they own the food companies, what you put in your children, what the children are watching, the technology, the media. So they are like cows in a slaughterhouse getting beat up ever since they was little children. The America is not being able to let parents be parents. For instance, if you discipline a child in public, they call it child abuse.
Right.
They're locked the parent up. The child is continue to be bad. The child say, okay, I got no consequences to my actions. Because if you discipline me, you're going to jail. If you try to be a parent towards me and correct my behavior, the parent goes to jail. They want these kids to be bad because it's a line they pocket. But us as individuals, families, organizations, and everything, we have to connect to them through love and healing, emotionally, spiritually, and everything. It's going to take a community, you understand?
Yes, and I think, I mean, and you hit that spot on, and because, and me being former from law enforcement, and one of the things I had a problem with law enforcement getting involved in situations that they shouldn't have been getting involved in, just because it's a parental issue with the kid, and the feeling that they can step in and just take authority over or away from a parent in front of a kid. And those tactics were purposeful. And when you also look at the police pension system, that is, they are invested, highly invested in the prison system. So it is beneficial to them to incarcerate people. And so the whole law enforcement, or when they call it justice, it's called just us, meaning just for them. You know, so it is different. And so we do have to look at it from a different lens, and we have to discipline our kids and be that one that handles those situations in front of the police. Deal with them. You know, you need to stop the police when they do certain things or come at. I mean, they need to understand that you have this. And I know sometimes there's an intimidation factor because they show very little respect and concern for us, but we always see that it's different when they deal with the Europeans. And so there is a deep hatred for us from law enforcement, and I don't think that that's going to change despite a lot of things that's going on that they come up with. But one of the things that we have to stay focused on is building these different programs in the community. And so when they talk about defunding the police, and a lot of people say, well, we need the police. No, you don't need them to behave in the manner in which they're behaving. But when you defund the police, you develop these other programs. And so we have to be those people that are involved in these programs, that are mentoring these kids. And you have mentors, you have a village. You know, because when you look at everything that's going on, like they talked about everything that went on with the Milwaukee Bucks, winning the championship, and you saw all of those people that were out there, and hundreds of thousands of people, and they're talking about the coronavirus and Delta, I forget what you call it, whatever that is that they're so worried about. But, you know, it was just the economics, the money. But all that money and everything, that where's it going? You know, are putting that money back into the inner city? You know, it's going in the downtown area and outside, but we're still having these same problems. So we need some help, and we need to get these programs going. And if we don't get them going, we need to just do what we need to do as parents, as strong men, individuals, and have that support system with our brothers and sisters. And we know we can do it ourselves. They know we can do it ourselves because we've been doing it. The Black Panthers, they started the food lunch program, and with the nursing program, but the health and welfare of our own kids. And they didn't like that, and they took that over. You know, so they know that. And we've always been resourceful and resilient and been able to do those things. Was said before, we've always had, despite everything that's been going on, we've always had your geniuses and hundreds and thousands of them throughout the beginning of time, you know, to do all the good works. But they control the narrative, so to speak, as far as writing the books and this and that. And their weapon is just denying the truth. And that's part of that critical race theory that we're dealing with today. Dr. James, any comments? Oh, we have another caller at 770-909. Caller, questions, comments, or are you just listening?
I'm just listening.
Okay. Well, we thank you for listening. Dr. James, any thoughts? Oh, I got another caller, 678. 9323 678 9 2 3. Caller, question or comments, or are you just listening? Six seven eight nine two three. Caller, question or comments?
Just listen.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you for being on the show.
Well, I definitely have a comment. I think that some of you know that I'm a new grandmother.
Oh, yeah. Congrats again.
Grandson. But as I got the new grandson, I got another grandson who is 8 and a granddaughter who is 6. So I'm now the grandmother instantly of 3 grandchildren. And I think I'm probably one of the most fortunate people to have within my social and professional circle some of the most highly credentialed individuals with whom I can talk with regarding some of the observations I'm making about these 2 older grandchildren. And what I'm seeing has me very troubled. And I've been able to talk to my friends that are pediatricians who are specialists in the public school for evaluating children with various behaviors. And what I'm seeing look to me as red flags for problems. And what I'm seeing also, though, and I've had kind of an intense opportunity to observe these children who are incredibly intelligent, beautiful children, kind children, but I am seeing some behaviors that are going to present some problems for them. And that is not listening, doing what they want to do, argumentative, defiance, opposition. And I sat and watched with them some of the media that they are looking at. They've been looking at YouTube Kids is one. And what I noticed in the episodes that they're watching, there are no adults in any of the storylines. So you basically have children making decisions, and there's no one to question or to challenge it in the storyline. And you can observe the gesturing, and you can observe the tone that they're using are coming directly from these TV programs, these internet programs, which is certainly some of what we're talking about today. And what I asked for was some help on this. And this is really where the Kitty Boot Camp in its real sense has come about.
Yes.
And that has been working intensely with these children to address their behaviors, address lying, address defiance, address not listening, address handling other people's things that are behaviors that are going to down the road create problems for them. Now, if we don't deal with it while they're 6 and 8 years old, they're only going to get older.
Yep, being hard to handle.
My concern is how do we, at least in my case, I will address it.
Yes.
And my, in addition to observe what I'm seeing to determine what strategies need to be put in place. Brother Alfonso has spoken about the biochemical abnormalities that we've learned about, and that there are some ways of treating this. and I want to see my grandchildren achieve the highest level of functioning that is possible. I want them to be as successful. I want them to be as creative as I can see in their brilliant minds.
Yes.
But it's going to require some hard decisions in terms of who is going to be relied upon to assess the children and to recommend the sorts of things that will ultimately allow them to develop in a normal fashion, a compassionate fashion, so that they are not feeling that it is okay to shoot people just because they're on the street. That they won't be feeling that it's comfortable to destroy those items that are in their house or in other people's houses.
Yes.
We've got to address it. We can't just say these are children and this is children's play and they'll grow out of it. That has not been what our experience has been. And so I intend to address it, and I hope and will support other families saying, I've got to do something different. Something's not right. How can we bring about some changes? These are some of the things that Brother Suleiman has helped with in terms of addressing their thought process, addressing their discipline, and it's not over, the process. But we put in a lot of work, and we hope that other people will recognize that if it doesn't look right, it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't right, and it warrants some attention.
Brother, thank you, Dr. James. Brother Suleiman?
Let me go ahead and add on to that.
I was just going to ask you for a comment.
I want to go ahead and add on to the fact that in today's world, the word discipline has some people cringing. But discipline to kids, especially kids that deal are bad, they are used to whooping. So whoopings is out of the question. Because an ass whooping, you hit them on the ass with a belt, whatever, 10 minutes, they okay. They in their room. They in their room. They wanted to be in their room the whole time. They wanted their top of in everything. But if you do something more constructive as far as writing sentences or lectures or them acknowledging what they did wrong, them actually verbalizing and taking responsibility of what they did wrong, or them exercising. If you're too tired to get in trouble, you're not going to get in trouble. Or it's many different ways for them to be disciplined as far as just whooping, because whooping really don't do nothing.
Mm-mm. It should get up.
It really don't do nothing. It's not furthering their mind. You have to get them more involved and more in tune on how they could do better.
Well, yeah, I think that whoopings just can't be the only tool. There's going to be a time where you have to do something like that. And I can give an example. When my daughter was 3 years old, she kept running out in the streets, and I'd pick her up and I'm like, no, 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 no. I'd tell her, no, not to do that. And the third time she did it, I tapped her on the leg, and she looked at me, and she was just so traumatized from that her daddy tapped her on the leg. But she did not run out in the street again. She knew what she understood at that point because of what I did. And, you know, you can't expect someone at a certain age to have that level of comprehension. But sometimes that shock theory, and that's what that did, but because she knows that I do what I do out of love, and because that's all I've been giving her. And when I did something like that, she internalized it different, because she kind of, I picked her up and I hugged her and I let it, but she, and I kept explaining, you know, no, I don't want you to get hurt. This is why you don't do that. And so, and that was the only time. My daughter's in her 30s now. That was the only time I ever had to discipline her. But again, that's one form of it. But when some people, this is the only way they have, you know, that's another situation. But Alfonso, go ahead, please.
I just like to, I'm truly always a pleasure to be with y'all family and have these conversations. And many of us are activating what we're talking about. I know we're engaged in our communities doing the work that we're talking about. So we're not just talking. Right. So I do know that. But I would just like to say that I know Brother Charles is doing a lot of work in the community with the brothers and the father, with the fatherhood piece and the parenting mm-hmm. piece. And I think that is very critical moving forward with the work that needs to be done with the black men to help them understand what their role and responsibility is as it relates not just with their own children, but the role of manhood in the community and in the collective work that is going to be required to change the condition in our community. This is the condition in our community is not going to change until black men stand up and say enough is enough.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you, Brother Alfonso. We're coming to a close, and I would just like to thank you all for joining us today. The Sankofa Council for its support of this program and for sharing their vision, unity following African-centric principles, and helping us to learn how to use those principles in our life. Now, we look forward to bringing to you more programs. We hope you will enjoy. Visit our sponsor, www.edocadvice.com. I'm going to say good night, Brother Charles Cujo Robinson, Dr. Jamie James, Sister Dee Dee Conley, our guests, Brother Alfonso Watkins, and Brother Suleiman Halim. All right. So, again, we appreciate you guys coming out and being on this show, and we hope to have you again. And again, we thank our callers for calling in for questions and comments. And Sister Dee Dee?
Yes, sir.
Is there another way they can leave a message if they want to contact us? Email?
Yes, sir. Look, now you know. Okay. Oh, my goodness.
That's okay. Well, you can also.
Could you just send a shout out to Bob, Dr. Rogers, man?
Definitely, yeah. Dr. Rogers. Thank you, Dr. Rogers, for being here and helping us get this program on. We missed a week, and we're so glad to be back and to have Dr. Rogers in full swing with us. He's just such an inspiration to us all, and we just appreciate and love him so much. And again, thank you, Dr. Rogers.
Oh, my goodness.
And again,
Brother Quasi.
Mm-hmm, go ahead.
All right. If the family would like to get in contact with us, you can contact us with Sankofa Council at mke@gmail.com. So if you have any questions or comments, Sankofa Council at mke@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you, Sister Dee Dee. All right, fam. What was that, Brother Cujo? All right. Well, thank you, guys. We look forward to hooking up with you again next week. Enjoy, please.
Damn, this motherfucker too crazy, Saucy. Let that shit ride, 88.
This shit over. I wonder what's
what's after it or what's, you know. I keep my gun in my drawers, ducking the sad news. My phone say 7 missed calls, I know it's bad news. This life had left me so scarred, I'm knowing that's true. Remember, tongue got so hard, I got it tattooed. I painted no shows, but made some bread. I gotta keep the family fed. Look, just talk to pops about the feds. I ain't gonna lie, he had me scared. I feel him coming, nigga. I'll keep on running, nigga. If we go down bad, keep it a honey, nigga. My girl all in my ear screaming, spend some time. I promise I'll be here when I can get some time. Right now, I gotta get what's mine out. Be thugging to the end of time. And fuck these niggas cause they lame. Since they love saying my name.